This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
Hey everyone, Jim Wright here, along with Dr. Michael Gurian, the Wonder of Parenting podcast, a brain science approach to parenting. As always, we want to say a special thanks to one of our sponsors, and that's Man Cave. Men all need to be caring, actively engaged, vested, and encouraged, a program designed to engage fathers with an intentional focus on family outcomes and child development. And Marion is doing such great work here in Phoenix and in other places. You can check him out at wonderofparenting.com, wonderofparenting.com. So, Michael, hello once again. Welcome to our show.
Thanks for having me onto our show.
Yeah, that's right.
Great to see you, man.
So this morning I was watching Good Morning Britain. I like to get a little different perspective, and I don't get as stressed out watching somebody else's news as I do watching our own. And Laura Tubin is the meteorologist. She's really passionate about climate change. And today we're just talking about some things we already know, that last year, 2023, was the hottest year on record. And one of the things she talked about was that if these trends continue, we're not that far away from a time when 94% of our kids may not be able to go out and play anymore. And she's talking about my grandkids, right? She's talking about the two grandkids you've got coming here not too long from now, our kids. And so we're really honored today to have a guest on with us who's been thinking about this stuff, working on this stuff, and has written it from the perspective of a dad. He's written a new book. This is Bill Weir. Bill, we're so glad to have you.
Hello, Tim. Hello, Michael.
Bill is the CNN anchor, and he is also the host of the Wonder List on CNN. And he is their first, Bill, you're their first chief climate correspondent. What does that mean?
Well, it's interesting. You know, most of my career, I spent a decade at ABC News at Good Morning America and Nightline. And I came up through local news. And most of that time, I resisted a beat. You know, I love politics. I just don't want to eat it every day, you know. Mm-hmm. And I like sort of the generalist. I have a very omnivorous curiosity. And after I made the Wonder List, we did three seasons of that show where I traveled to the wonders of the world and wondered what will be left of them when my daughter's my age in 2050. Her lifespan was sort of the inspiration and changed the way I saw the world entirely. And came back and the election of 2016 sort of changed CNN's lineup for obvious reasons. And so when I knew I wasn't getting that show renewed, they said, maybe you should be our climate guy. We need to create a desk around this. And I realized it is the one beat that includes everything. You know, we think of it as sort of a menu item when the pollsters come around every election season, but I argue it's the whole restaurant, and the economy and healthcare and foreign policy and food, travel, clothing, shelter, all depend on a planet in balance, you know, healthy ecosystems, reliable weather patterns, which unfortunately are gone. And so every story most stories anyway, I see a climate angle to them. And then I became a new old dad at the height of the pandemic in 2020. My brother and I are 16 years apart for strange reasons. I never thought I'd repeat that, but my daughter was 16 and I had my little boy River, and we're looking out at a world in lockdown. At the time, there was so much fear and uncertainty what was going on. Yeah. I had been immersed in climate reporting, and you know that can get very dark when you sort of read that fire hose of scientific warning all day. And so I looked down at this little squirming boy and realized this kid is going to live to see the 22nd century. And I mean, and just the changes in the first 4 years of his life, what has happened, you know, is so staggering. And so I started distilling both my travels and some lessons I'd learned, ancient wisdom, cutting edge technology, you know, so to the giants of psychology and history, to look for lessons for my kids, like how to live on this world, an instruction manual for how to build and think about wants and needs in a way that I didn't have to. And so that's where the book came from.
So tell us the title of the book, and then, you know, it sort of grew out of your passion to share this story with your kids. So,
yeah.
But the name of the book, and then these started out as letters, I think, right?
They did. Yeah. I've been writing letters on Earth Day. The first one was pretty, you know, apologetic. Sorry. Welcome to this world that we sort of messed up on your behalf. But what's interesting is that, and the book is titled Life as We Know It Can Be, with can be in parentheses. The idea that life as we know it is over, that the Goldilocks Earth we grew up on is not coming back. But life as we know it can be through solutions, through nature-based solutions, through pulling together around each other and science and more resilient ways, can build more resilient communities come what may. And so that's where the title came from. And to be honest, I was supposed to turn in this book a couple of years ago, but I never appreciated what a soul-searing exercise it is in writing a book. I write for TV literally every day, but it's a whole different muscle set. And I sort of write like a man lost in the woods in the dark with a weak flashlight, you know, going down false trails. But I'm so glad it took long, because things happened in those 2 years that gave me so much more hope. And I focused so much more on solutions, on the movers and the dreamers and the doers, people turning their anxiety into action, and pairing that with the lessons I'd learned from the healthiest and happiest communities on the Wonder List around the world. That's where the letters kind of got more hopeful as they went along. And hopefully this book in the end gets folks fired up.
Yeah. And I this is what I find with a lot of people really passionate about the climate, is that it can really be apocalyptic stuff. And yet there's so much hope out there because there are ways that we can get together to make this thing happen. So what I'd like you to do, if you could, is just read a little portion of the opening, your letter to River.
Sure.
And because I think it kind of gives us a context for what we're going to talk about here.
Okay. I'll start with a little... I'll start with the dark stuff and then transition to something a little more hopeful. This is the prologue. It's called Letter to the Future. Dear River, against all odds, you were conceived in a lighthouse, born into a pandemic, learned to crawl amid democratic and industrial revolutions, and will have tasted just enough life as we know it to resent it when it's gone. I'm sorry. I'm sorry we broke the sea and the sky and shortened the wings of the nightingale. I'm sorry that the Great Barrier Reef is no longer great, that we value Amazon much more than the Amazon, and that the waterfront neighborhood where you're growing up could be condemned by rising seas before you're old enough to apply for a mortgage. The Earth I joined in 1967 is gone now. No one knows what kind of planet will replace it. The United States of America I knew and loved is gone now too, eaten from the inside by metastasized lies fed to furious people, forgotten places. And then it gets, we talk about the wonder, the things that I get to introduce him to, from wild blueberries to the boundary waters, to Baja, to beautiful things built by the hands of ancient men and women. And you'll meet so many kind people, you'll forget most of them. And I also am so glad you're here, because maybe yours will be a world with hydrogen airships instead of diesel tractor trailers, and stingray-shaped robots that sink seaweed to bury carbon instead of factory fishing trawlers that clear-cut the sea. Maybe your buses will bring you to school on sunlight and then help power your classrooms after dark. The world's most abundant fuel source might be the isotopes in seawater, or little nuclear fusion stars in boxes, or minerals mined on the asteroid named Psyche, somewhere between Mars and Jupiter. Your great-grandparents were alive from the Wright brothers to the space shuttle. But as the Earth unravels and artificial intelligence rises faster than our imagination, their 20th century rate of changes per lifetime will seem as quaint as the butter churn.
Wow, that's great stuff. Yeah. So we're going to take a little break. And then, Bill, I want to dive deeper into this with you. You're listening to Wonder of Parenting Podcast, a brain science approach to parenting. Hey, parents, staying hydrated, as you know, is crucial. And of course, the best way to stay hydrated is to have great tasting water available to you throughout the day. And that's why I want to recommend to you AquaTrue. AquaTrue purifiers use a four-stage reverse osmosis purification process, and their countertop purifiers work with no installation or plumbing. They remove 15 times more contaminants than ordinary pitcher fillers and are specifically designed to combat chemicals like PFAS in your water supply. They have water purifiers to fit every type of home, from installation-free countertop purifiers to high-capacity under-the-sink options. Just one set of filters from their classic purifier makes the equivalent of 4,500 bottles of water, which is just 3 cents a bottle. And I can tell you, as a user of AquaTrue, the water tastes great. AquaTrue comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee and even makes a great gift. Today, our listeners can receive 20% off any AquaTrue purifier. Just go to AquaTrue.com. That's AquaTrue.com and enter code WONDER at checkout. That's 20% off any AquaTrue water purifier when you go to AquaTrue.com and use the promo code WONDER. Now, Michael, you and I have talked a bit about some of the impact that this is having on our kids. You talk a lot about toxins and what it's done to the to kids' bodies. We know sperm counts are down, for example, in boys, things happening to girls' bodies. Give us just a little quick review of that, and then we're going to have Bill dive into what he's learned about those things.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, like male testosterone levels are down about 30%, you know, about a percent a year, and that's from environmental neurotoxins mainly. And what's in pesticides, so all those pollutants. And that's actually a very dangerous thing, of course, because that leads to more male depression, less motivation. The depression leads to more male violence. So, you know, and a violent male is almost always a depressed male. And then for girls, again, neurotoxins, everything. I mean, even just coming in on all the pollutants coming in on their skin when they put lotion on. To say nothing of pesticides and all of those things. So there are, you know, more brain disorders, of course, and everything, more obesity. And so every pollutant or toxin that comes in does affect our bodies and our brains.
So Bill, as you've been doing some research, you've discovered some of the ways that our lives are sort of being redesigned because of this, the heat and the climate change. Michael's just talked, you know, very briefly about the impact it's having on our kids. What are some of the things that you've been seeing?
Well, it's interesting to hear Michael's talks about the chemical prices we're paying, you know, for the modern life. You know, I sort of framed the book around Abraham Maslow's pyramid of needs, actually. Mm. I became fascinated with him, sort of the founding father of humanism, who in 1943 wrote a theory on human motivation that took the shape of a pyramid in sort of popular culture, but really sort of helped me address things to River about the pyramid that I built when I was growing up and took for granted everything at the bottom, which is the physiological needs. If you imagine a five-layer pyramid, and the ground floor is your physiological needs. It's air and water and proper temperature, excretion, right, homeostasis. If you don't get those, nothing matters. Level two are your security needs, shelter and economy, rule of law, information that keep you safe. This is where our governments are, and sort of our religions are based around level two. And then the higher needs, level three is love. We need to belong. We're social creatures to a partner or a club. The esteem needs are level four. We want to be respected. You know, we practice our Oscar speeches in the mirror and like to think of ourselves as the hero. And then at the tip of the pyramid, Maslow, at the time he wrote it, called it self-actualization. Whatever you can be, you should be. But by the end of his life, he was ready to scrap that idea and realize that the mentally healthiest the people he admired, it wasn't about self at all. They transcended their own desires and really hewed to certain values like truth and beauty and honor and honesty and completeness and humor. And so as I try to tell him to think about his needs, I was taught that your consumption, you know, your choices as a consumer dictated your worth and life. And, you know, without ever questioning what that does to the air and the water. And when we decide we're going to believe stories that we need these certain chemicals to meet our basic pyramid of needs and all those hidden costs, And it's not just the physical toll that it's taken on our kids, but psychologically, they're growing up in the golden age of distraction and addiction and depression. And I write about in the book, my biggest regret as a parent was giving my daughter an iPhone, teaching her how to use Instagram when she was 10. And I know now, you know, I thought we were giving her that device to help her fill her security needs, you know, at the bottom of her parents, stay in touch with mom and dad, maybe listen to her Taylor Swift albums, and not realizing it was handing her this glass box of anxiety, you know, that just fuels the worst part of sort of adolescent growing up, you know, 24/7, a pipeline to them. And so we're just sort of coming around to what that means, how we interact with each other. And I argue that if we flip the pyramid of needs and really try to connect with each other about toxin-free waters or understanding what's in the air in our zip code or thinking about the way we build shelter or our food supplies and just engaging with neighbors around those things that we know can make us healthier, we'll fill up the love and esteem needs, you know, at the same time that right now we try to fill with yoga retreats or cruises or stuff, you know? And so I see the effects on this generation. My heart goes out to them. So much burden is being placed on this idea that you guys got to save the future. I just did a piece on CNN. I was really inspired by a number of MIT students from Korea and China and India who created these water technology unicorns, you know, on ways to filter and desalinate water much more cheaply, much more accessibly. And we turned to those folks and said, all right, good. The future is going to save us. But how we parent this generation will largely determine how things go, you know, on planet Earth, how we pull them through the scarier times of unpredictable, unnatural disasters, and how we rally around each other when resources get tight. You know, I dedicate the book, I'm inspired by in my climate reporting. Mr. Rogers said, you know, when he saw a scary event on TV, his mom told him to look for the helpers. There's always helpers rushing in there. And I meet so many first responders when I go cover these storms, but there are countless helpers out there living lives of sort of quiet service. And I'm trying to plug my kids into that ideal and how much stronger we are together.
Bill, it's fascinating to me how you just very wisely connected the phone to the climate change, in a sense, right? That it's all this thing. And of course, Michael has been for years beating the drum on screens and phones. And so, Michael, I know you're there. You're thinking, amen, amen, preacher brother. So piggyback on what he just said.
Yeah, just total agreement and so appreciative of your wisdom, Bill, and contextualizing it also in parenting and raising the next generation. And of course, the phones. I mean, Tim is right. And I've been for 15 years or whatever it is, I'm one of those people who's been saying don't give it to them, you know, until they're, 13 to 14, give it to them as a rite of passage. But, and it's all about brain development for me, and brains just aren't ready. So therefore more anxiety, depression, et cetera, just as you said. So I'm in total agreement with you. What I wonder is if it's possible to get now this generation, since we can get the science to them and this generation of parents, you know, and say, okay, like my kids are 34 and 31. They're about to both have babies. And I have, definitely, you know, pumped it into them and shown them the research that when they have kids, don't give these kids these phones so young and all of that. And maybe we can get this generation to sort of, boomerang back or away from, the phones or, you know, the smartphones, because it's so easy for kids to get an index phone. We can give our 10-year-olds an index phone where they can keep in touch with us and call us to pick them up somewhere. Right. But that's not the same as all that screen time. And of course, from the brain's point of view, a lot of it is not just the phone, but the screen time. And for these kids. How do we contextualize it further with climate change, do you think? Because you said everything's related. So how would you connect? Would it be like the minerals that have to go into the phones?
Yeah, that's part of it, sure.
That have to get mined?
Yeah, the massive amount of e-waste. I just did a story about this. If just the e-waste, anything that has a plug or a battery, that was thrown away in 2022 would fit in a convoy of dump trucks that could circle the Earth, you know, around the equator. Like we don't think about it. The same instinct that we have, and they call it shifting baseline syndrome in ecology, which is you take your kid to the beach you grew up on and say, you know, there used to be tons of starfish on this beach. They're gone now. And your kid has no idea what they're missing. And then when they take their kid into the woods and there's no bird song, that kid won't have any idea what they're missing. And we just adapt as humans. That's our superpower, which can turn against us. So the phone is obsolete before we get out of the box. What I came across just in writing this, and Abraham Maslow talked about how he thought that American kids were way too codependent on mom and dad. And so when one of those relationships frays, it just adds more trauma. And he was inspired by doing doctoral field work with the Blackfeet tribe in Canada and saw how indigenous communities passed the child around to the community and spread the love around. And he encouraged the antidote for codependency is a lot more sleepovers, a lot more trips to sleepaway camp, and getting, you know, kids out. I preach about this just as much as the phone, is getting kids out in nature and getting engaged with the natural world and just the awe of that. And I live, you know, in Brooklyn, where my little boy is obsessed with nature, and we're lucky we have a couple of parks. He's limited to the frog he finds, you know, next to the East River and all of that. But even kids who live in rural areas, because of the bombardment of stimulation these days, they don't know what they're missing as it slides away. And I talked with a young person really recently who actually broke my heart and said, well, if I can have just fantastic virtual reality, why do I need nature anymore? I can take a walk in whatever woods on whatever planet I want to imagine. And now it is my mission to take that kid hiking, and get him to see a bald eagle or a bear. But that's the thing that unfortunately we these things that we sort of take for granted, and our life of ease and self-isolation ultimately hurts us in the end.
So we're going to be back with Bill here in just a moment. We're going to take a quick break, and you're listening to the Wonder of Parenting podcast, A Brain Science Approach to Parenting.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Our family has grown. Welcome to the world, Hannah baby. Introducing a new collection, Hannah Soft, made with Tencel. It's so breathable, with stretchy comfort for all of baby's first moments. And it's cool and gentle on their skin all year round. Entrusted Hannah quality for your most precious gift. Hannah Soft, made to last. Shop now at hannahanderson.com.
Bill, I know you've got the book in front of you. Do us a favor and read through the table of contents so we get sort of a sense of where you're going to take us in this adventure.
Well, it's the, again, it goes back to Maslow's story. So I set it up by explaining his story. He came from actually a horrible childhood. His mother was a monster who he describes as being racist and cruel and would punish them with hunger and put a padlock on the fridge. But out of this curiosity about the dark side of human nature, he became fascinated with the healthiest among us, and that's where his theories come from. I found him really inspiring. So after my letter to the future, part one is the physiological needs. So I get into air, temperature. Chapter three is water. Chapter four is food. And in each of these basic needs, I talk about how I never thought about air until I went up on a flight over the Permian Basin of Texas with a special kind of airplane that smells methane and carbon dioxide leaking and displays it in Technicolor on a screen. And the stuff we don't see in the air, how it's, you know, ruining all the stuff we love. It's, you know, it's poisoning the oceans. It's overheating our systems. It's throwing millions of species in the danger of of extinction. I wonder if we could see that era, if we'd think differently about it, the way we could see the smog in the 1970s that brought us the Clean Air and Water Acts. But there are solutions around this. I talk about temperature in the same way. Big water problems, too much or never enough. We're cycling back and forth between drought and flood these days. So we have to think about every drop of water in a different way, how to save it, how to manage it on a world where it's well, we can't take it for granted anymore. And then on food, I look at how the Blue Zones, I started with a visit to the Blue Zones in Greece, where you know folks live to 100 at a crazy rate, thanks in large part to their Mediterranean diet, but also their connection and their community and how they move throughout the day. And also talk about, you know, some surprising things that ultimately a veggie burger can be worse for the planet than a hamburger. If it depends on the plow and it depends on the cow and how each of those were managed. There's new science around just by grazing cows more like buffalo, it revives soils, recreates soils, draws down more carbon, brings back plant and wildlife and holds rainwater in staggering ways. So there's some surprising science here. Part two, we get into the safety needs. So I get into shelter, how I grew up working construction, building homes with skinny walls and giant furnaces and air conditioners. But the future is going to flip that equation. Hmm. And now with passive house and much tighter construction, you don't need much power. You can body heat in some cases can keep a home warm if you do it right. We talk about the energy needs that are part of your security needs and how we, for most of human history, we use coal and gas because it was the cheapest, or coal and oil is the cheapest option. That's not the case anymore. And these amazing new ideas on how to store abundant wind and solar power. I don't bet you guys, if I ask you guys to guess, Tim and Michael, what state do you think has the most green energy in the United States these days?
I have no idea, so I'm going to guess Arizona just because I live here, but I know it's not.
Yeah, I have no idea.
It's Texas. Texas has more wind and is installing more solar than California and Florida. And despite, you know, political and ideological resistance, industry resistance, the economics now of abundant renewable energy just makes sense. So 98% of new power plants going online for the rest of my child's life will all be clean energy. Then in part three, we get into the love and the esteem needs. And this gets a little more autobiographical as I look back at my daughter, Olivia, my marriage to her mother that sort of fell apart while I was shooting the Wonder List, how I became addicted to social media. Mm. After giving her phone, I became a Twitter addict and got myself in trouble, you know, trying to meet my love and esteem needs of the pyramid with strangers, you know, and quips and how seductive that is and the lessons I learned from that. Mm. And then, you know, in the end, just coming back around to communication with each other and self-actualization, which is ultimately about service and the lessons of the Good Samaritan and how we treat each other in these massive storms, in these wildfire zones. And the most inspiring examples I've seen from, I was in Maui for those wildfires. Mm. Met a man there, Archie Kalepa, who was sort of a legendary lifeguard who has taken over as a recovery elder and just displays the kind of self-actualization that I would want in my son, which is, you know, not only the tools we need as good parents when the days are good, but when your whole neighborhood burns down and everybody is scared and doesn't know whether they can breathe the air or where the water is going to come from. And unfortunately, that kind of stuff is going to touch more and more folks as we go along. And now's the time to sort of rally around each other, have these trust building exercises, get out into nature with each other. I encourage people. There's a trend out west now where people are mimicking the power of beavers to bring back watersheds. They've reintroduced beavers in the UK and they've just completely restoring wilderness in the best ways. And now in places even without beavers in Arizona, exactly. Actually, they did an experiment where by building these check dams, by moving rocks around your property in a strategic way to slow down the rainfall when it happens, you can bring back grasses, bring back bird life. What you need for that is just some neighbors and a sunny day and maybe some beers, and you sit around and talk about water and you talk about rainfall patterns and you connect with each other around your shared resources at the bottom of the pyramid. I think that's the way we're going to brace ourselves for whatever happens next.
Such good stuff. And I what I appreciate about your book is you know, it's relevant to all of us. It's relevant to parents. It's got a lot of your own heart and your own humanness in it. I got two questions as we wrap up. The first is, what gives you hope?
What gives me hope is that ultimately we as human beings are made up of stories. All of the borders and currencies and the flags and the corporations, these are ultimately, they seem so permanent, but they're stories that we've agreed on and they're changing all the time. They're changing rapidly in our country. The stories we grew up around, political parties and how, you know, all these sorts of things. And we have been telling this story, I think, in the wrong way. Conservation and the idea of being, you know, eco-sensitive or whatever, or being into nature for the longest time was associated with hippies, you know,
right,
or hiking yuppies, and you had to live in the woods in a yurt and eat tree bark if you cared about, you know, life. Whereas the story now is that you can live a more comfortable, healthier life and do the right things, you know, for the ecology around you, thanks to technology being married together with ancient wisdom. And so the more people come around to these ideas and just question the stuff that I grew up with, the story will change. And the pandemic in a lot of ways was a dry run for how the communities that rallied around each other and trusted each other and the science didn't suffer as much as others who don't think about it until it's on their door, you know? And so what gives me hope is that we can always write a better story.
Yeah.
And the same brilliant frontal lobes that, you know, unlocked fire and nutrition and gave us the one species that can use stories to motivate and put robots on Mars, those same brains can fix the problems that we make by accident along the way. And I'm a big believer that humans want to do the right thing and want to live with their higher values at the forefront. At least I hope so.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. My second question is, we're parents, we're grandparents. What are a couple things, practical things we can do to instill this sort of a passion into our kids and be proactive?
I think it's sort of just broadening their awareness of where things in their life come from. And if they're like my kids at all, just how enormously lucky they are to live in a place where you turn on the tap and water comes out.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And do you know where that water comes from? And it's funny because we just ended up, we took a little road trip to the Catskills last weekend and stumbled across a place I didn't know existed, that in 1951, to expand New York City's water supply, the state condemned and flooded three or four towns called Neversink and Bittersweet. And hundreds of people were displaced for this. And we don't think about that when we turn on the tap, you know, but I think when my son is old enough, I'm going to teach him that lesson. And the idea that all these choices that we have for filling our air and water and temperature needs have a cost and they come from someplace. And the more curious they can be about that, the better. And maybe they'll end up going into water technology and become, you know, create the next unicorn of investment in that space, or be inspired just to connect around these things on a more holistic way than I did. And it's not about preachy self-sacrifice. There was a time when, you know, we showed our love and esteem needs. We filled each other's by buying a mountain's worth of stuff on Christmas morning, right, you know, and after, you know, it looks like a mall threw up in the living room, you know, to show our love. But then we know now that buzz wears off before, you know, the matinee begins, right? Or before the afternoon football game begins. And so how to think about ritual and making experiences very special instead of mountains of hastily assembled stuff, connecting on around those things. And again, going back to my idea of the more time we can spend with each other in nature, the better. Yes. And I made friends with a scientist out of Stanford who uses social media to study the relative health and physical health, mental health and physical health of communities by looking at social media, by scrubbing all of that data and with keywords and these sorts of things. and he does a lot of interesting social science work. But he was involved in a few studies that looked at, you know, the whether it's wealth or health or, you know, these certain values in life that ultimately satisfy us the most. And ultimately, it was human health, physical health far outweighs any material wealth. But the social connection and the sweet spot for socializing in real life is about 4 to 5 hours a day. The average American, it's less than 40 minutes. And for our kids, it's probably all through screens, you know?
Right.
And so, yeah, it can be awkward to make eye contact with somebody and be in the same room with them if you've forgotten how to do that over the course of the pandemic. But getting our kids together with each other in real life, to climb trees and, you know, and make beaver dams in the yard and build community. That's what I'm shooting for.
Yeah.
Whatever time I got left.
Bill, that's just it, and what's so amazing to me, Michael, is how everything Bill's talked about today just sort of feeds into all the stuff that we want to talk about on this podcast about building community, the communities that surround our kids, getting out into nature.
Yeah.
It's just been, and it all, it just, it's wonderful how Bill, you've tied it all together. You're doing such important work.
Yeah. Oh, thank you guys.
Give us the name of the book again and where they can get it.
Sure. It is Life as We Know It Can Be. Stories of people, climate, and hope in a changing world, and it's available wherever you get your books.
So, Bill, I've got one little gift we want to give to you.
Awesome.
Michael is a New York Times bestselling author, and he's going to tell you right now how to become a New York Times bestselling author. Michael,
please.
Tell him how.
Okay, so Bill, Tim always makes fun of me for this. So, of course,
only
he would
because
work
I'm jealous.
In.
Yeah.
Well, I have a feeling Bill is. You're probably a New York Times bestselling author.
We'll see. I don't know. This is my first one. No, yeah. This is my first book, and I'm getting a crash course in marketing and this whole dark arts of bestselling.
The dark arts. Well, your book is going to be a New York Times bestseller. Oh, I mean, it's just, and you've got a team around you. I mean, that's how it happens is you have this whole team and you're out there constantly and plugging it and contextualizing it. And the way you contextualize it for the audience, like you've done today, is just amazing. You are really, deep. You know, and yet you say it, you can present it in a way that everyone can go, oh, yeah, I need to know more about that. Mm-hmm. And I just want you to know I appreciate you and anything we can do to help you. We are glad to do. You're wonderful.
Yeah. You guys are so kind. And I really appreciate those words. I mean more than you know. When you go away by yourself and you sort of give birth to this baby.
Right.
I have no idea how many people are going to think he's ugly or, and so, you know, some of the, but to get such kindness from you guys is just means so much to me. Thank you.
So for our listeners, I will post a link on Amazon to the book, and you'll find it on our Facebook page. Wonder of Parenting, just go to Facebook, hit Wonder of Parenting. We'll let you on in. Bill, it has been an honor and a delight. And boy, best to you with such important work you're doing. And God bless you on your book.
Yeah.
Gentlemen,
come back. Okay. Come back. We'll see
you. My pleasure. It was such a pleasure to chat with you. And I'm a new listener. I did my homework before settling in here and love what you guys are doing. You have to teach me how to handle river.
Send us a question. We'll
send you a million questions.
Well, thank you, Bill. Thank you, Michael.
Thank you, Bill.
Thank you, everybody, for listening.